Welcome to Behind the Wheel, a podcast exclusively created for our team. Stay up to date with the latest industry trends and company news directly from David, Simon and the team. Whether you're a driver on the road, working in the office or on the floor, this podcast is just for you. So sit back, relax and get ready to discover something new.
G'day everyone. We are in rainy Sydney recording our next set of podcasts. I think we're getting two or three out of this lot. We'll see how we go. We've got Mark Beery, our National Warehouse Manager, Mick West, our National Transport Manager, our CEO, David Simon, myself, Artie Almassi, our media person, Paul Cundall. We'll introduce Paul, who's been developing a lot of this stuff for us. And our special guest today is Peter Tennyson. So Peter's pulled out a banana within 5 seconds of recording this, so I don't know what's going on here. But welcome, Pete. It's great to have you on. Great to have you on as our second guest that we've had in this podcast series. 33 years with the company. So 1990 kicked off.
That's correct.
But what I did find out in the last week is that you are another that has left and come back at a point in time.
Yeah. Was the grass greener on the other side, like you said?
Well, we'll get to that. Well, I came back after 4 months. What do you think, Mick?
So, Pete, talk us through 33 years. Yeah. How many roles have you had?
Oh, several. Almost every role except for David and anything in finance and legal.
You want David's role?
No. Annabelle and Angela can have those other ones and David. But, yeah, I started in April 1990. It was a week after Easter. That was when we went 657 Springvale Road, Mulgrave, and with a rear property. And there for a couple of years. But I started as a, now they call them fleet controller. Back then it was a two-way operator. Because we had two ways, the mobile phones and all that sort of stuff. So I took over from Russell Harris. He was the operator at the time. So he showed me the way. The first few days you go out in a truck, of course. Ian Grace showed me the ropes. Did that for a few days and I was thrown in the hot seat. And having the two-way radio, you were called base, and of course you had the truck, so you get on the two-way and give out all the pickups. Firstly, arrange all the deliveries. Yep, they're all out and about. They'll call them when they're finished, and you give them the pickups. And I remember the first day, I was on my own, and someone had just cleared in Lilydale. So back in those days, you know, you say whatever it was, BT80, clear in Lilydale. Yep, base. All right, I'll give you some pickups. And I just rattled off six pickups in a row. Without a break. And at the end I said, you got all that? And I got the first one, pyro panels at Lurdar. So naturally you meant to stop and say pyro panels, Lurdar, whatever the specific thing. Everyone had pens and papers, remember? So write down 3 pallets for Sydney, 4 pallets, oh, it's about 6 pallet spaces. Yep, wrote it all down. And they'll say, yep, right, next one. And you run through. So it might take you 5 minutes to run through with just 6 pickups with all the detail, but that's the only way you can relay that information. So, yes, it was a rather humorous that the very first time they said, yeah, now what's the one after pyro panel? So I learnt to slow down, take your time, and say, yep, clear, ready to go. So I did that for a couple of years, and then we moved up to Dandenong in 92-ish. Great facility. It was much larger in size. A transport on one side, a warehouse on the other. But at that stage, we had a bit of warehousing customers, and we knocked a big wall out so we could drive from the forkies from one building to the other. So I did that role there for about 12 months, and then I jumped into the operations role. Russell Harrison moved on, so I kept on following him a little bit. I was the operations manager there for about 3 years, up until 1995. And that was the first time I met Morgan Simon. Heard of him, so forth, over the phone. Yeah, ring up, Peter, what happened to that load? Bit of a payload, didn't get much on that load. Yeah, okay, yeah, talk about it.
When you were in the ops manager role?
Yeah. Not so much when I was in the other role. The first time I met him was, I came in one morning, sit in the ops chair, look out the window, I said, who the hell's that? 6:30 or something.
Was in his white Y fronts?
Yes. So, first time I met Morgan Simon, I'm looking out the window, there's a trailer out there, and he's on top of the trailer. He'd already run the cap off, run the curtains. He's up there throwing felt onto a forklift. So he must have driven the forklift, lifted it up, then climbed up on the load. Couldn't do that today, of course. And he's throwing this. I said, who the hell's this bloke? I walk outside and yes, it was Morgan Simon. He was in his whites, underwear and singlet. But he'd come down for meetings for a couple of days to see customers and didn't bring a change of clothes as, he didn't want to get his suit dirty.
Yeah.
So he stripped down. So then we were there until 1999. 2000. In that time, the business grew quite substantially. And so we moved down to Clayton, and that was a huge site, 4 or 5 times bigger than what we were in Dandenong. By that stage, we had some substantial warehouse, 3PL customers. Just reflecting back in 97, that's when Pirelli Cables came on board. David and Chris got that account, and that opened us up to be a legitimate 3PL. So they had their own facilities right around Australia. So they moved in with us. And then in 1999, Pirelli, being the smallest cable manufacturer in Australia, bought out the largest, MM Cables. They bought them out. So they went from 20% margin to close to 60% margin, 55% margin of the cable industry in Australia. Sure. So in 99, we did it all over again, and their facilities were much bigger. So they shut down all their facilities over the next 6 to 8, 9 months. They moved in with us. We had to bring staff on. It was a busy time, and that's why we moved down to Clayton. Ironically, the building we went into in Whiteside Road, Clayton, was the old MM manufacturing site. So they actually sold, got out, and we reconfigured it all. Mark and myself, because at that stage, in 99, Mark and I had become joint state managers. So in 95, we lost our state manager for 15 years in 95. Also, our sales manager, Blakey, after 10 years in 95, they finished up on the same day. And I actually finished up a couple of weeks later as well. I actually gave my notice. I was the ops man. I was just about to go into sales and get in a different role, and I was getting a little bit itchy. Been there 5 years, had a couple of roles, wanted a bit more, and I just started going into sales. And then BK, the state manager, went across to a large transport provider who had just bought out another transport company, and he was running that state, all that branch within Victoria. A month into it, he rang me and said, "Pete, I need you over here, mate." I said, "What? We've got big problems here." Anyway, he enticed me, threw a few things at me that got me over there.
Pork pies.
Porky pies, yeah. Those 4 months was very interesting. One thing you asked Kempy, you're probably not going to ask me because I haven't been driving trucks, not for Simon.
Well, go on, answer it.
The best truck and the worst truck. Well, I love the Kenworths when we bought the Kenworths. So sensational. We bought 20 or 25.
T600s.
They're beautiful trucks.
88, 89.
88, 89, yeah. They're beautiful trucks. But in Melbourne, when I started that first day, you'd go out in a truck for a few days, like I still do now, you know, with a buddy, and they show you the ropes and so forth. We had a Ford Louisville. Yeah. And it was a Ford Impala. It was a big monster thing. And it had 2 chrome exhausts, a V8. Oh, I loved it. And I actually went out in that truck, did all the deliveries, ended up at Kubota. And so that truck is my favourite and the worst truck. Oh, I loved it. V8. It was powerful. Oh, it was a prick to drive. Oh,
it's rough.
The steering, and the seats, you're bouncing around, but it was so enjoyable. I couldn't drive it for a long period. It's
funny, Pete. I always picture you drove for more than that week before you became radio operator.
No.
I always picture you and that Louis. So.
Yeah, but I did do a lot of deliveries as well. We had all those grocery deliveries, all the distribution centres. Oh, so... Yeah, I actually went out a hell of a lot and did a lot of morning deliveries.
We
got back
a lot of shampoo and stuff. Remember?
Oh yeah,
for Border Express.
Yeah, yep. So I used to go out and do the close ones, up at Mulgrave or just down the road, Safeway, Mulgrave, and those ones. Come back and then you're still there for the afternoon to do the majority of the pickups.
Thanks, Pete. Good little snapshot of the early days there, and I've got to say, make sure you tune into podcast 4 and 5 because there are some interesting stories to come, and you'll definitely get some laughs out of it. So our session around industry updates, business updates as well, a little bit to cover here, but as a quick wrap-up of the last 2 podcasts, we spoke a lot about how we've got to this point and the after effects from the pandemic. So then for today, we want to touch a little bit more around what that actually looks like over the next year or two and the feedback that we're getting from clients for even beyond that. What that means for us as a business is that our competitors that are more retail exposed, they'll be carrying less volume. They need to fill those trucks or warehouses. But predominantly, if we're talking transport, filling trucks means pitching and getting other work that competitors are doing, and we would be one of their competitors. So what's happened if you go pre-2020 and pre-COVID, the normal market at that point was there was a lot of carriers out there that were targeting different types of work that wasn't necessarily their core, which is some of the work we do. We'll find that there'll be other carriers targeting that. We are already seeing that. We can't control that. All we can control is our service levels, and there's a lot of effort internally around making sure that we're across that and people are doing the best that they can and we're providing value.
Mentioned at the start of the podcast, we're in Sydney at the moment. We've run a workshop with our Sydney and the feedback from them was just busy, busy, busy. They're busy everywhere. Volumes are solid. And same out of Melbourne, same in Brisbane. Brisbane and North Queensland volumes are very strong. Brisbane to Darwin volumes are, this week, the highest they've been in quite some time. There's no real trend of softening, I guess, and certainly not since those public holiday weeks, short weeks in April. The outlook really hasn't changed, I guess, since the last podcast. I think a lot of what Artie's just spoken about, we don't have the exposure that some operators do to discretionary spending, and most of our customers have got exposure to areas that either will see growth or, as we've talked about with housing, there needs to be some change by governments. There's been a lot of talk about housing shortages and governments addressing it. Some of those governments can't do too much about it, certainly not short term. I think short term, the real solution is still comes back to local government and planning and approvals and encouraging developers, maybe waiving some infrastructure charges to keep some costs down, but making land available. The approvals in March, which were the last reported figures, were down 24% for units and 18.6% for houses on 12 months ago. So there's and 12 months ago wasn't a solid period for approvals. The interest rate costs, the difficulties getting subdivisions approved, uncertainty about sales, uncertainty about costs, that's all what is delaying development at the moment. They were factors 12 months ago, so the numbers were low then, and they've dropped by significant percentages since. So something needs to be done. I don't think government throwing money at it's necessarily going to help if the subdivisions aren't done and developers still struggle to get a project over the line. The planning's got to be eased up. That will happen, and we've got exposure to upside when that does happen, upside from where we are now. Infrastructure projects, I guess I'll talk more about the budget, but the budget certainly, one of the key announcements in the budget, but no outcomes, was that they're reviewing major infrastructure projects. A small group of us had a meeting with the Federal Treasurer about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he really explained in detail. It surprised me his knowledge of our industry and our road user charging and things. But those infrastructure projects, they're really just trying to take some of the cost out, that there's too many projects going on, limited resources, just like everything else, and that's leading to inflation in the cost of those projects. So they're trying to pull that back in and get projects back to back. That's their main aim there. From what I understand, though, there will be some road projects impacted, delayed. Inland rail, I'm hearing there's certainly its progress there has stopped, the planning, the way forward. So we're likely to see a drop-off in spending on inland rail for customers who've got some exposure there. That'll be important to note. Water projects, I think we touched on last time, but we started the first loads of a couple of thousand, a bit more than that, from Melbourne and Perth going up to Gladstone and the Fitzroy River for a water pipeline from the Fitzroy River into Gladstone. A lot of that is around hydrogen production in Gladstone. So that's a big job. It will keep our projects division very busy for the next 12 months, and it'll be a significant part of our turnover for the next year ahead. But again, it's good turnover, good business, and positive for us. Other than the budget, I think the other big thing that's occurred probably ties in with the housing shortage to some degree, but the Fair Work Commission decision on wages. So most of our staff are actually paid under a reward basis. That's lower than inflation, but it's higher than, I guess, what government was wanting to see, because it's likely to, or it risks pushing inflation more if people have got more money to spend. There are, I guess, that two-speed economy, and some people are struggling and very much need that increase, and government recognises that. Those that don't will just spend it, and that will push inflation perhaps higher. I know a lot of people are struggling, and particularly with rents and housing costs, and I guess the one thing I probably should flag, Over the years, we've certainly advanced leave to staff. We've paid out leave where we can under awards, all those sort of things. But if you're struggling at all, reach out to your manager, talk to us. We can do things under awards, paying out annual leave, even paying out long service leave. I've become aware I didn't think it was possible, but it is in circumstances possible to pay out long service leave. And giving an advance that you pay back is another option. We've done that. I've done that yesterday for one of our staff members. So yeah, if you're struggling, don't talk to your banks and those sort of things first, but don't hesitate to come forward if you really need help. What else should I talk about, guys? Talk about things like National Heavy Vehicle Law, but that review is really going nowhere and not changing too much. I think maybe some improvements around logbook fines, but minor things really compared to what's really needed, but governments just haven't got the appetite, unfortunately, for that.
Agriculture, we've got some exposure there, and we've had some, in key sectors, there's been some good weather patterns that have helped some areas, cotton being a key one for us. It does cause us different challenges in terms of the surges that we do get, but we're expecting a record cotton season this year again, which is
not as high as they had forecast at one point earlier in the season, but I think we'll have some cotton wrap left over. I think there's some here in Sydney that's unlikely to go out now, Mark. Be here for next season, but the rainfall we're seeing at the moment, particularly southern states, and we should have a good season in southern states next year. The rainfall we're seeing in the northwest and through central Australia is incredible at the moment.
I think the weather patterns that they're sort of predicting over the next 12 months potentially will have some impacts on the line haul fleet in a lot of ways, but also obviously on stock levels that we're holding and distributing. You look at Victoria at the moment, the dams are full. They're releasing water. You know, Mick can talk to that more. He's sort of all over it, having a house boat at Eildon and worrying about whether it's going to float each year, but I think it's going to be floating for a lot of years ahead of us. But, you know, those sort of things puts, you know, some of the states are in, you know, got potential flood issues if we do get a lot of rainfall. And then the other side of it, you know, they're talking, you know, heat waves coming with the El Nino. So
yes.
I think we're in for some interesting times that, you know, we can't predict, but we've known over the years in this business, they do come and go, and they do affect what we do.
Mm. Yep. Equipment costs, I know you mentioned that the other day, David, with what's coming up.
Yeah, certainly equipment costs. Prime movers that we'll order this year for delivery next year will be something like 30% dearer than trucks we ordered in 2021 that we're sort of just seeing the tail end of deliveries of now, Mark.
Yeah.
But yeah, big part of that's Europe moving to Euro 6. Part of it's, I think, just supply chain issues around the world, and maybe in time we'll see some of that ease off. But a lot of it is just the technology. Steel prices are well
up.
Labour prices around the world are well up. So there's a very significant increase in equipment costs. Yeah. Trailers are similar, not as big an increase, but that steel's a massive component, and labour's the other major component of a trailer. They've certainly risen over we've seen that rise already, I guess, over the last couple of years.
So good wrap up there from Westy, Mark and David. Just really talking about the challenges that we've got coming up, but also probably the key part is the optimism in the market going forward. Yeah, potentially some drop off in the short term, but with who we're aligned with, some strong optimism going forward. Further that. Now, to lighten the mood up a bit, we've got a brand new segment that we have introduced, and the first guest in this brand new segment, which is called Car Talk, is our own Mick West.
Behind the wheel, Car Talk.
So, Westy, we know you're a car man. What is your all-time favourite car?
My 66 Mustang.
Your current one that you're driving?
Current one that I have at home in the garage, yes.
Beautiful. Did you import it yourself?
No, not directly, but I bought it basically, almost fresh out of a container from a gentleman that had bought them in.
Yeah, left-hand drive, right-hand drive?
It's still left-hand drive.
Kept it?
Yeah.
Cool. Did you get it how it currently is, or have you restored it?
I restored it. Bought it as a driving car, unregistered, of course, got a Vic Roads permit, drove it home, thrashed it and started from there.
Thrashed it. How many engines are you up to?
Three.
Just three.
Three, yeah. The actual first engine ever went in.
Yeah.
The engine builder wasn't happy. He said it wasn't going to last me.
Yeah.
The original motor that came out of it,
yeah.
The engine builder himself bought that motor.
He
wanted it because it was the original motor. You know the old, I think they call it smog?
Yeah.
Smog pumps on it?
Oh, yeah.
Where they pump air into the manifolds.
Right.
It all had all that original
Oh, wow.
Stuff still on the motor. He wanted it, so We tried to blow it up, my brother and myself, but we drove around in second gear trying to kill it all one Saturday and Sunday. It never happened, so.
It didn't blow up?
No. No.
Solid.
Wouldn't let go.
We have some common themes around blowing engines up around this table for Pete and Mark. You had a story about a blown engine.
Mm.
What car was that in?
That was my XR V8 302 Windsor.
Piston straight through.
Yeah.
It's a sad moment, isn't it?
Mm.
So, engine number two blew up as well?
Yes. It was Christmas Day. I'm in the fire brigade locally at home, and I've been doing it for years, and I play Santa. We get out in the fire trucks and deliver presents to the needy and all the kids of members of the brigade, and that lasts us up to about 1 o'clock, and then we all end up back at my place for Christmas with the family and all that sort of stuff, and a few of the fire brigade staff that don't have families, they were there on the day, and I'd eaten a little bit too much, and my son asked me could he take the car out for a spin and take the fire brigade people. They were all keen to go, and I said, yeah, no problems, go ahead. And, he fired it up in the shed, and the house shook, and away they went. And then my mate taps me on the shoulder and said, your son's just rang me, your car's stopped. I said, no, I picked up my phone and had a look. I said, he didn't ring me. He goes, no, he's shit scared because it stopped.
What do you mean, stopped? Stopped.
Yeah, he said it stopped. So anyway, I rang Dylan up and said, what's happened, mate? He said, it cut out. I said, where are you?
Cut out.
He said, Mills Road. I said, what are you doing there? He said, I'm out in front of your work. And I go, well, what's happened, mate? And he goes, I just stopped. I said, all right, I'll come down, mate. So I grabbed my work keys, and because I'd eaten so much, I couldn't drive. And a lady friend of mine, she drove us down there, and I get there, and anyway, my first hop out the car, walk up. I'm looking for liquids on the road. I didn't see any of those, so I thought, well, that's a positive. And there's no fire, so, nothing too
also
much.
Positive.
Also positive, nothing. Well, we've seen what's happened to the latest models, Mustangs. We've seen two of them, and the V8s go up in smoke lately.
Yes.
So that was all positive until I popped the bonnet and put my hands on the fan, and I'll try to turn the engine over anyway. It didn't turn over, and I knew something had gone amiss. Tried to hit the key, and it just clicked, and I thought she seized up, so...
And then what, next day, Boxing Day, have you gone back?
I went in Boxing Day. I got up.
Pulled it apart, metal everywhere.
I couldn't pull the engine out. I pushed it in the workshop, I'll get the motor out of it, but I tried to, for anyone that knows how to pull a motor out, you got to pull the transmission off, and I couldn't turn the motor over to get to the four torque converter bolts, and I thought, oh, shit, so I ended up having to drop the sump. I actually had to undo all the rods, what were actually left attached, And finally she released the crank, went, she freed up and I could turn it over and I proceeded to pull the motor out. And I threw everything in the rubbish bin at work in the steel bin.
Yeah.
I kept the block even though it was absolutely nothing left of it.
Yeah.
The cam was okay. The heads I kept, but they were shot. Everything else went in the bin. There was absolutely nothing.
Couldn't do anything.
The crankshaft had massive marks. Everything was gone. So I took it down to the engine builders, Frank at Dandy Engines, and Lou come out, the owner of the business. He had a look at it and said it was pre-detonating. So, blew to pieces.
Yeah.
So obviously, had to source another engine.
Which you've done now, right?
Yes.
So what have you got in it now?
It's got a dart block on it from America. Obviously, got that bought in. Brand new block.
How long did you have to wait for that, Westy?
It was actually quite quick. It was only probably 2 months, I think.
During COVID as well, right?
It was during...
Okay,
it was
pretty good.
Just the start of COVID, It came in, as they'd ordered what they required. So it came with its crank. It came with certain stuff, that block that we ordered.
Yeah.
So it's still... it's a 351, based on the 351 block.
Yeah.
Windsor, still. It's stroked out to a 363.
So, right.
Yeah. And put together by Dandy Engines, who build really... high-end engines.
Yeah. Dart block. Dart, yeah?
Dart, yeah.
Right. Horsepower?
Absolute tad under 500. The boys actually, they did salvage my heads.
Yeah.
And they were smaller in diameter in the pot size. So Dandy Engines put the heads on, they flip them upside down, they score it, and then they machine out the head and oversize the valves. Yeah. So they actually used my heads, they did recover them.
Yeah.
But they actually did want me to put new heads on. They were trying to get me to go Higgins heads because they wanted to go over the 600 horsepower, and I'm going, no, I'm staying at this. They wanted to go to this. They want to spend your money.
Yeah.
But I use my heads, but it is the bottom end's built a lot more. If I want to change them out now, I can go put new heads on it.
Yeah.
Everything matches, but I'd have to change intake manifold.
But what are you allowed to legally have it up to?
What's
Oh, sorry. That's a silly question.
It's
legal.
Irrelevant, Pete.
There's engineers around that can make it safe.
It's safe. It's got four-wheel disc brakes and it's got lap belts.
That's right.
The steering wheel's on the left-hand side. So,
what's the torque number?
It made 475 newton metres of torque. And they say it was quite high because of the heads, what they'd done to them.
Yeah.
So it upped the compression because of that reason. But yeah.
Yeah, right. So that'll get you to the grocery store pretty quick.
Probably pull a trailer with it too.
Yeah. You get the tip pretty quick. You get the grocery store pretty quick. Get home pretty quick.
Yeah.
Thanks, Westy. Bloody ripper bloke as well, for anyone that knows him. So that brings to an end podcast number 3. We hope you enjoy the new format. That's come on the back of feedback from staff, and just to introduce something a little bit left field as well. So the next couple that we have in terms of podcast numbers, podcast number 4 and 5, will be similar, and there's a lot more car talk in there as well, and there are definitely a few more laughs. So stay tuned for those. We'll also obviously include our market updates and part 2 and 3 of Peter Tennyson. Thank you.